Hello, welcome to the New Books Network. This is a Literary Studies podcast, and I'm Natalia, one of the hosts on the channel. Today, I will be speaking with Laura Lee, the author of Oscar's Ghost, The Battle for Oscar Wilde's Legacy. Hello, Laura.
Hello.
It's very nice to have you with us today.
Thank you.
So, would you tell us a little bit about your publication, about this project?
Yeah, I started working on it. My interest in the subject began about 6 years ago, and I started doing the preliminary research at that point. Although I didn't know that it was for a book, I just became very interested. I had read Oscar Wilde's De Profundis, which I downloaded in an e-version, and the version that I read was a public domain version, which was the 1905 or 1908 version, which was edited. So when I learned about the full version's existence, I looked it up, and it was a letter that Oscar Wilde had written in prison to his lover, Lord Alfred Douglas. And it also was an essay on his philosophical thoughts and his views on art and how he had been transformed by prison. And the part that was a letter was very cutting, and it surprised me because it contrasted so much with the published part. And so I wanted to know what Lord Alfred Douglas thought about the whole thing, and I started reading Douglas's biographies, and I learned about his fight with Oscar Wilde's friend and later literary executor, Robert Ross. And so I wondered, well, what did Robert Ross have to say about all of this? So I started reading biographies on him, and I just kept digging because I felt like everything that had been written about this dispute was from a biography, so it was kind of partisan. It was taking the view of Douglas or taking the view of Ross or celebrating Wilde at the expense of someone else. And so I just wanted to see if I could figure out what happened and, you know, how this evolved and why they were locked in such a dispute for so long.
And why Oscar Wilde? Is it somehow connected with your current interests or current occupation? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm a full-time writer, so I do a lot of random reading. I like to go and wander the library, you know, to clear my head, just taking books off the shelf. So when I got my first Kindle and needed something to download, and I was looking for something free and in the public domain, I thought, well, Oscar Wilde, that sounds interesting. So I was familiar with his society comedies. I was familiar with Oscar Wilde as a wit and, you know, a guy who uttered lots of one-liners and the basics of his life story. But De Profundis is a different side of Oscar Wilde, and I really responded to it. So that led me off on this journey.
Mm-hmm. And the subtitle of your book is The Battle for Oscar Wilde's Legacy. So what was this battle about? At some level, your book reads as a detective story because it's very, very detailed and it covers a lot of nuances. So will you outline a little bit this main conflict? Because as I read your book, I felt like there are a lot of conflicts, actually, there. On a personal level, on a professional level, on the legal level.
Yeah, well, it's a biography. People come to it through Oscar. So Oscar's Ghost is basically the legacy of Oscar Wilde and how these two friends of his dealt with his death and their grief over his death and their role in what they did and didn't do. And Robert Ross and Lord Alfred Douglas had been very good friends. But they had a lot of differences. They had a lot of similarities too. People tend to play them in contrast, but they had a lot of similarities. They lived the same kind of life up to the time that Oscar Wilde went to jail. And when Oscar Wilde got out of jail, he gave the document he'd written in prison to Robert Ross because he handled a lot of his business. He was very responsible in that way, helped him a lot. And he wanted him to type it up so that he could work from it and, you know, make different writings from it going forward. And he wanted him to send the original to Lord Alfred Douglas. And that didn't happen. And over the years, Ross and Douglas drifted apart, mostly because of politics. But once they became estranged, Ross decided that he wanted to first publish parts of De Profundis, which he considered his property. And then he wanted to kind of set the record straight as he saw it about Oscar Wilde's downfall and what caused it. And so he started sharing letters and sharing De Profundis with biographers. And when Douglas discovered this through reading a biography that Ross had assisted on, it just blew up. And they spent the rest of their lives, the rest of Robert Ross's life, because he died much earlier, just locked in a furious conflict over De Profundis, over their shared history, over what Oscar Wilde really thought about his relationship with Lord Alfred Douglas. So there were lots and lots of elements to it. And I liked the story because they're all very complex characters, and I don't see any simple heroes and villains in the story.
Mm-hmm. How so? Oh, well, you mentioned that these three characters, so to speak, are quite different, and they quite similar as well. How did they become drawn to each other? And it looks like writing drove them apart. But will it be correct to assume that they were drawn to each other via writing as well?
Yeah, I mean, my theory on their attraction to Oscar Wilde was, first of all, Wilde was a very brilliant man and a brilliant conversationalist. He wasn't a beautiful physically man, but each of them was attracted to his persona, his personality, his intelligence. And both Robbie and Bosie, as they were called by their friends, were fatherless, in a sense. Bosie had his father, but he had a very difficult relationship with him. And Ross had lost his father very early. And Oscar Wilde was quite a bit older. And he mentored them, and he taught them about art, and he gave them a philosophy of life that was very positive, where being different and an outsider and exploring that difference and being free to explore that difference was a positive, and all that mattered was art. So I think he was a very exciting figure for them, and they both fell in love with him, and they both were inspired by him in art as well.
Well, in your book, you mentioned something about Robbie and Bosie. Robbie was used to relating to older people and was intellectually self-assured beyond his years. Bosie, by contrast, was still immature. And then a little bit further, you bring up the connection between Oscar and Walter Pater, and the Walter Pater's influence on Oscar. So I thought that this combination is quite interesting, because it shows Oscar as someone who connects Robbie and Bosie.
Yeah, I think that Oscar was attracted to each of these friends for different reasons, and Robbie, besides being kind of a responsible person and a caregiver and a very mature, he was also someone who was attracted to colorful personalities and difficult people, and he could clash with people also, and Bosie was kind of a free spirit. He was aristocratic, so he had a lot of freedom to do what he wanted, and people would allow him to get away with things, and so he didn't have to grow up. And I think that Oscar had responsibilities. He was a married man. He was trying to make a living through his writing, and he admired this idea of just following your passion and burning with a gem-like flame. And Bosie kind of represented that for him. And I think together, these three friends and their wider circle of friends could just encourage each other, first from talking about the philosophy of going and living life to the fullest, and then living it out a bit and encouraging each other to live it out. So they got into some scrapes together.
So would you agree that this relationship involved a lot of manipulation, especially when Oscar Wilde was imprisoned?
Manipulation from Ross to Douglas?
Right.
It's difficult to know. I mean, some of the biographers who wrote biographies of Lord Alfred Douglas, who spoke to him and were influenced by him, came to the conclusion that Robert Ross was kind of manipulating the situation to turn Oscar Wilde against Bosie. I don't think that that's true. I think that he was acting as an intermediary, and I think that he and Bosie were good friends at that point. They occasionally had arguments, but friends of both Ross and Douglas tended to have arguments with them periodically. And after Lord Alfred Douglas went back to England after Oscar Wilde got out of prison, he spent most of his time at Robert Ross's house. So I don't think that at that time Ross was trying to mess up their relationship. I just think that the difficulty of prison made Oscar Wilde reflect on what had brought him there and go back over this relationship with Bosie. Yeah. And just ruminate.
Yeah, you mentioned that the prison experience for Oscar Wilde was transformative. Would you elaborate on that a little bit?
Well, it was while he was in prison, he had been brought to prison because Lord Alfred Douglas's father, Lord Queensberry, had been determined to separate them. And so he basically stalked Wilde until he felt he had to bring him to court, and he sued him for libel. And that boomeranged and led to Oscar Wilde being tried for gross indecency and going to jail. So when he was in jail, he kept thinking back to all of this, and he thought back to his relationship with Bosie and Bosie's emotional ups and downs, and like you would, because he was essentially in solitary confinement, he wondered, you know, was it worth it? Was this relationship worth what happened? And he reflected on that. He had been humiliated when going to his bankruptcy hearings. He had lost everything financially. So his thoughts turned to money a lot. And so you can read in De Profundis, he keeps kind of circling back to these same themes. And so he was growing more and more negative about Douglas while he was sitting in jail. But that changed when he got out. He was determined to reunite with Bosie. And even in De Profundis, it's clear that he sees his future with him. So you have to kind of read his negative thoughts on their past in context.
And what about Oscar Wilde's wife? What was her role in this kind of turmoil?
Well, I think that Oscar was genuinely devoted to his family in the way that a man of his era would be. Even for heterosexual people in that time, it wasn't, men weren't expected to have their primary relationship, their main friendship, their source of companionship be their wife. They kind of occupied separate spheres, men and women. And so I don't think that he saw marriage and family as incompatible with being devoted to Bosie or having this secret homosexual life in quite the way we would now.
So, well, then going back to Oscar Wilde's a letter that he wrote in prison, De Profundis, What is it about this letter that probably upset the participants of the conflict?
Well, it upset Bozzi, certainly, because it was very critical of him. It was a very scathing indictment of his personality, his mood swings, his actions in their relationship. And up until the time that Bozzi read the full document, which didn't happen until years after Oscar's death, the things he was proudest of in his life were how he had stood by Oscar Wilde during his ordeal, his talent for poetry, and his role as a muse and an inspiration for Oscar Wilde. And De Profundis kind of attacks all of those things. And it happened, he learned about it at a time when he couldn't ask Oscar about it anymore. He couldn't answer it. So it was emotionally devastating for him.
What issues does this letter address in terms of Oscar Wilde's emotional probably collapse or some sort of transformation as well?
Well, Robbie received the document and he, I think, believed it more literally. After Oscar got out of jail and he wrote letters to Robbie for a variety of reasons, he wrote much more negatively about Bozzi to Robbie than he did to other people. And part of it was that he had this emotional relationship with Robbie. I think he wanted to minimize his love for Bozzi to Robbie. Part of it was that Robbie was acting as an intermediary between Oscar and his family, respectable society, the lawyers. And so he wanted to present himself as a bit more reformed than he was. And so I think it suited Robbie to believe De Profundis a bit more literally, especially in light of the other letters that Oscar wrote him. And so he believed that Oscar was always trying to get away from Bozzi, that it was Bozzi who was pushing himself on Oscar, and that Oscar was worried about getting back together with him. And De Profundis really blames Lord Alfred Douglas in a singular way for his downfall. And prior to that letter being made public, as Robbie did by giving it to biographers, people tended to blame Oscar Wilde's circle of friends in the plural for egging him on both to extremes of behavior and in his lawsuit against Queensberry. So whether he knew, you know, whether it was conscious or whether it was just that view of things appealed to him, he really promoted this idea that it was only Bozzi's fault. And that minimized the actions of his other friends.
So it looks like this battle involves not just literary legacy, but some sort of emotional legacy as well. And it sheds some light on some relationships that developed in the course of this interaction. So, and it sheds light not only on literary scene, but on social scene and political scene. So would you touch upon those like socio-political conflicts that this conflict probably highlights or reflects?
Well, when Robbie and Bozzi were young, they weren't too involved in politics beyond kind of promoting the cause, which was, I guess today we would call it something like gay liberation, mm-hmm. although it was quite different. But they were excited about art and philosophy and the things that young men are excited about. And as they grew older, they got more involved in society and politics, and their differences started to come out. Lord Alfred Douglas was always conservative. He was born an aristocrat. He liked the social structure as it was. He liked his position in society, and he didn't want things to change. He viewed that as decay. And Robbie, on the other hand, he was a member of the Reform Club. He was involved with people who were more liberal, who were bohemian, and so they completely differed in that regard. And Bosie, as he started to get positioned and become an editor of a arts journal, he would be very unyielding about his opinion. He was always unyielding about his opinions, but they would clash on politics. And Bosie eventually decided to convert to Catholicism, and he became very serious about that. And he would sort of moralize because he had the truth. And that became more pronounced after their feud started. But those were the seeds of what drew them apart and what eventually caused their clash.
There is a lot of traveling in this story. They move around Europe and further. So as I mentioned earlier, your book is based on a lot of details. And out of these details, we can reconstruct not only the story about Oscar Wilde and his two partners, but about Europe of his time and about London of his time. It evokes some images of a cityscape, so to speak. So how would you describe that cityscape in the context of this conflict?
Well, I think at the beginning of the story, the British Empire was coming; it was reaching its peak. London was essentially the center of the civilized world, so it was drawing all kinds of people. People who lived in rural areas of England were coming to make their fortunes. There were lots of immigrants. And so it was very cosmopolitan. I think for these young people around Oscar Wilde, it seemed like anything was possible. And for the aristocracy, Bosie's social class, as they moved into the early part of the 20th century, the aristocracy was losing its power, losing its influence and prestige, and losing its money. Whereas the middle classes, represented by Robert Ross, was gaining prominence, and so they were on different trajectories socially, and London was on a different, you know, for depending on what class you were in, it had a different feel of whether things were growing and becoming exciting and opening up possibilities, or whether things were constricting and falling apart. So those influenced how those two men and how those two friends saw the world.
So some sense of crisis is very acute.
Yeah, there was certainly within Bosie's class, there was a sense of crisis and a sense of things falling apart. And I think for those who were inside that bubble, it seemed very unfair, and there had to be some external force that was upsetting the natural order of things. And so, you know, Bosie turned more and more towards what we, I guess, call extreme right wing views in his later life.
So, and what about that financial crisis part that contributed to Oscar Wilde's turmoil? So he was struggling financially, like, constantly. And things got even worse when he had some sort of financial and legal disagreement with his wife. But after his imprisonment, that sort of a crucial impact was probably augmented even more so.
Yeah, he was being supported by his wife after he got out of prison. He always was a big spender. He always lived beyond his means. If he had money, he spent it. He liked the best things in life if he could get them. And if he couldn't, he would get them on credit or get people to give him money. But he lost everything when he went into jail. He went bankrupt. But he had a marriage settlement with his wife. And there's a big conflict, which is very detailed, and about Robert Ross and negotiating this settlement. But the result of that negotiation was that the lawyers saw fit to say that if Oscar Wilde associated with disreputable persons, he would lose that money from his wife. Now, to us now, it just seems absurd that he would think that he could go and live with his male lover while being supported by his wife. But Oscar was determined that by rights, she should do that. So when he was reunited with Bosie and went and lived with him, he was just outraged that the lawyers said that that constituted a breach of the agreement and that she wasn't going to pay. And no one wanted these two to get back together. They were, you know, they were scandalized by the idea. The British ambassador even came and told them that England disapproved of them living together. So Bosie's family also tried to starve them out, and he also lived mostly on family money and the generosity of his mother. But he was contributing. Bosie was contributing more money. He had a larger income. But in any event, both sides tried to cut off their funds to force them to separate. And eventually they did. They stopped living together, although they continued to see each other, and sometimes they saw each other every day, and they might as well have been living together. But that satisfied the terms of the agreement, and Oscar got his allowance back. But he still was always broke, even though he did have some literary success with the Ballad of Reading Gaol. He shouldn't have been that broke, but even after jail, he would spend anything that came through his fingers.
Mm-hmm. So in your book, it looks like you attempt to present this a conflict from many sides, from Oscar Wilde's, from Ross's, from Douglas's. But at the beginning of this interview, you mentioned that you also read some other biographies, and I'm wondering how those biographies shaped not just the conflict, but your understanding of the conflict as well.
Because they were biographies of either Robert Ross or Lord Alfred Douglas, the authors, obviously, they're taking their point of view to a large extent, and they're trying to explain what they thought and how they reacted. So what I found is that most biographers, and whether of Wilde or Ross or Douglas, tended to have sympathy with one or the other, and they would be critical of the other. And you in a sense, have to kind of translate that and say, okay, what would the neutral version of this be? So I tried to understand what was motivating each of them as much as I could, and just present what each was thinking. Bosie, it was very easy because he wrote a lot and he talked a lot about his feelings, whereas Robert Ross was a very private person. But by seeing what happened, the things that he did say, and just trying to recreate through various court files what actions were taken and what could be proven. And so there's a lot of he said, mm-hmm. In the story. And so you can't believe the account of either of them at face value. So as much as I could, I'd say, well, you know, which version has more documentation and more evidence on this point? And sometimes the parts of the story that have kind of been agreed on, I found weren't very well documented, or if you look at them in context, they lead to a different conclusion than some people have made about them.
So you mentioned that you got interested in this aspect of Oscar Wilde's legacy after reading De Profundis. Could you share with us your experience?
Well, at the time, I had written a novel called Angel, which was about a minister who falls in love with a young man, and it upsets his kind of worldview. So a lot of the conflict, you know, about having a love that is looked down on by society was fresh in my mind, and some of the religious themes as well. I was reading a lot about Christianity and sort of gay-friendly interpretations of scripture and things like that. And so I was really taken by Oscar Wilde's philosophy of Christ as artist and what he had to say about outcasts and the sort of wisdom that you can get from being in that position of being, you know, outside looking in. And it's of course very well written and has lots of lines that just kind of transport you in terms of how he uses language. So I was really excited about it. I read it and thought, you know, I want more. And when I discovered there was more, I got very excited. But at first, when I read the more that there was, it was kind of shocking to me because, you know, he says things to his lover like, you know, you never think that you were worth the love that I showed you. I knew you were not. And that just seemed so harsh and kind of cruel. And so that was what led me to say, well, you know, what was this relationship? Why is he unloading on this guy? And, you know, how did he feel about what was being said there? So that was what kickstarted it all.
Well, thank you. Thank you for sharing your experience with us. And is your current work somehow connected with this project?
Well, my current work is I'm working on trying to sell a follow-up book because one of the characters who's kind of a side character in Oscar's Ghost, I discovered a lot of material. Maurice Schwab is his name, and he was part of this international criminal circle who were gentlemen con men who went on ships and found aristocrats to con at cards and to blackmail and all sorts of things and became spies. So it was really fascinating, but it was kind of beyond the scope of this book. So I'm hoping that I might be able to find some interest in that. So it's very related.
Well, thank you so much for your interesting book and for a very detailed investigation of the conflict and some insightful input into the understanding of what actually happened. I wish you the best of luck on your new project, and thank you so much for this conversation today.
Thank you.